Give us a download here on WGN Radio. We'll keep you updated. Secretary Clinton will speak at some point tonight. I'm not sure. They had a sort of screenshot when Donald Trump was talking. They showed the podium at her headquarters. So we'll get you to Secretary Clinton when she speaks, which will probably be after Donald Trump. So I'm saying like 11:30, 12. He's right now. He's right now in his The Apprentice was a great show. They wanted me to come back. That's my favorite Donald Trump. And this campaign is how he always works the fact in that he had a successful TV show. So we'll give you Hillary Clinton when she gets to the podium. Well, my guest tonight at the big table hails from New Jersey. She's a writer who's appeared in the New York Times, Self, Women's Day, and Runner's World, just to name a few. But you know what? For our conversation tonight, maybe I won't call her a writer. Maybe I'll just call her a runner. Jen Miller is the author of the new book, Running, A Love Story, 10 Years, 5 Marathons, and 1 Life-Changing Sport. Miller penned the story about falling in love with running, all kinds of running, although less on the treadmill.
Ugh, treadmill.
5Ks, 10Ks, half marathons, full marathons. Jen Miller's run them all. And through it all, she learned lessons about the important things in life, like happiness, health, and home. Jen Miller, welcome to the big table tonight.
Hey, thank you for having me.
You've got some stuff in town I should mention, too. You're going to be at Universal Soul in Lakeview. That's tomorrow night at 6:30. Where mm-hmm. I love this. There's actually a book reading and signing at 7:30, but you tell people to get there at 6:30 and you guys do essentially a fun run around the neighborhood.
Yeah, I mean, it's a book about running, so it seems to be a good idea to go on a run. So we're going to run a very easy 3 mile, whatever your pace. I'm not very fast. I'm a middle of the pack runner. So if you want to come run 11 minute miles with me, that's cool. If you want to run a 5 minute mile, that's great. If you want to run a 4 minute mile, maybe you should be getting ready for the Olympics.
sure.
But we're going to do an easy run and then there's going to be beers and me talking and it'll be great. If you don't want to run, then come out at 7:30.
Where does your love of running come from? Because, you know, I was surprised to read in this book that you didn't start with running. That you really didn't think about until, I guess, after college.
Yeah. Running was punishment. If you were like me and played 1,000 sports as a kid, you ran when you did something wrong or when the team lost. So I played soccer and I was captain of my high school softball team. So if we made mistakes, we'd have to run a lap around the field right. And then do 10 push-ups and 10 sit-ups. So running was terrible, and New Jersey can be incredibly hot in the summer. So my dad would make me run to condition, quote-unquote, which is what it was called, which is what boxers did. And I hated every second of it. And I didn't start running until I was in my early 20s. And I was a baby freelance writer. And a magazine paid me $750 to train for a 5K, which was, you know, seems like, oh, what a big deal now. But back in 2006, that was kind of an odd thing to do.
Right. And talk about that. Because, you know, you learned a lot about training, but you also learned about running. I mean, for me, running is one of those things that, you know, I've always had friends and people that I look up to and respect who, you know, just you post on Facebook, yeah, 5 miles, you know, this, that, and the other. And I'm always like, I don't know you. Who are you?
I don't even know me
but
sometimes.
I want to get there. I want to feel that euphoria when it comes around running. So talk about what you learned about it when you started that assignment.
Well, when I first started, I mean, as kids, we run. Kids run everywhere. And, you know, we run in sport and you run when, you know, you want to catch the green light as I am staring out at downtown Chicago. But when you do it to just run, it's this very weird thing. You're hurtling your body forward and stopping abruptly. So I think the stat that I have, and I researched it for the book, was you're throwing three mm-hmm. times your body weight into the ground and it's jumping back out to you. So anything that's not strapped down by, you know, compression shorts or a sports bra, you know, goes flying. And
right.
I have a lot of hair. So if it's not braided, it just goes everywhere. And it was a very odd feeling to do it at a slow enough pace that it was sustained. So instead of going out and trying to sprint, for the purpose of the story, I was given a running coach, online running coach, which at the time, again, it's 2006. I don't think I had Wi-Fi in my apartment at the time. You know, he told me, you got to slow down. You got to just don't sprint out, take your time. And that was the mantra that I kept in my head when I started, was go slow, go mm-hmm. slow. And you know, I've been running for 10 years as of this month, and sometimes I still have to tell myself to go slow, because a lot of the training for a lot of these runs are done at an easy pace. And it's not the sprinting or this morning I was doing hill repeats that where that sort of magic comes in. It's those long, slow, steady miles. And it's, you know, until I got past 5 miles, I didn't know what it was. And it took a lot of, it didn't catch right away, I guess right. is what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, you call it, in the book, you call it running is controlled falling.
Yes.
I love that.
And it's terrifying. I'm so, you know, and it's funny. I wrote in the book about how scared I was to fall. And I fell last year pretty hard in the trail running, and I'm still scared of falling. But you know, you can fall crossing the street. I had a friend who broke her ankle just walking around New York City. So right. why not do something fun when you do something stupid?
We're talking with Jen Miller. She's the author of Running a Love Story, 10 Years, 5 Marathons, and 1 Life-Changing Sport. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation. What I want to get at is, I mean, running is one thing and falling in love with it is another. And what it does for you. I mean, because, you know, running, I always find it is this experience where you're alone with your thoughts. Mm-hmm. And in that, and that's sort of what gets you sort of unwind in this book mm-hmm. is about the sort of thoughts and your how you run differently and considering what relationships you're in, things like that. So we'll talk more with Jen Miller here on The Download when we return. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the big table, Jen Miller. Her book, Running, A Love Story, 10 Years, 5 Marathons, and 1 Life-Changing Sport. You're also a freelance journalist, and you cover the industry that is running.
I do.
So you're not only writing memoirs about your love of running, but you're covering...
Who cares about me?
So let's talk about... I mean, it really has exploded in the last... it seems like decade, more and more Americans are getting into the sport, I would say the leisure... and sport of running.
Yeah, we went through what's become known as the second running boom in 2008. So the first one was back in the 70s when Americans started running in the Olympics and getting noticed. In 2008, the recession happened, and a lot of people started running then for the same reason, one of the same reasons that I did was control. You have this thing that is a stress relief and control. So the Broad Street Run in Philadelphia is a 10-mile race. It became the sixth largest race in the country. And I believe from 1 year to the next, registration shot up by 67%,
wow.
Which where else do you get that kind of growth? And I used to write a running column for the Philadelphia Inquirer. And I talked to the race director. I said, why? And he said, what was going on then? You know, I'm a freelance journalist and I lost half my clients. And I just bought a house and then I couldn't afford it. So I started running. Because it was one of those things that you can go out and do. It is still for me. I did it this morning, where you can go out and I don't always run with my phone. I'm not going to get a phone call or a text. Even if I have my phone, I'm not going to pay attention to it and just be. And just when I trained for my first 10-mile race, I would go run more than 5 miles. And that was when things sort of blanked away. And a lot of things had gone on at that time. The boyfriend at the time, mm-hmm. very bad alcoholic codependent relationship ended by him meeting somebody else. Though he told me he'd keep me in the top 8 of his MySpace friends. And then my grand...
Which, you know, that's a pretty good deal.
You know, I declined. You know. And Facebook told me that the other day, you might know this person.
Oh, no, that's the worst, right?
Yeah, and then my grandfather died. And I'm part of a very large Italian Catholic family. So that was traumatic. And then the recession hit and all these things... sort of slammed into me at the same time. And it, you know, I started running more and a lot of people did the same. So, you know, I'm glad that I had that experience of doing that first 5K in 2006 and having a coach to tell me what to do. And then it sort of became something I really hung on to. And I still do. It's been 10 years.
Let's talk more about that control because, you know, I always think about it. And when I run, it almost feels like, you know, for the first 2 minutes, I'm like, I'm doing it. Like that's the first thing. I'm like, I can't believe I'm doing this. What's that pain? Oh, is that? Oh, there it is. Something's wrong with my knee. Like I'm just giving you the thought process of my first.
You need to go to Universal Soul and get fitted
right,
for
right.
new shoes.
Okay, well I'll do that. But I mean, there's something about the human brain and releasing endorphins and the idea of I guess just spending time with yourself. That after a certain amount of time, you get past the sort of you know, small time stuff, and you start to have more sort of independent thought about your community, about your home, things that you don't necessarily get the chance to do in other places.
Yeah, it was a way to allow my brain to unknot. I wrote a lot of the book while running. And when I was writing the book, I would take my phone with me when I usually wouldn't. And these ideas and lines and memories even would come back to me while I was running. And I equate it to that sort of twilight between being awake and asleep, and you're in that weird zone.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wrote a story that was recently published in the New York Times called The Breakup Marathon. And I had interviewed people who went through a divorce. And then this one gentleman that I interviewed 11 times tried to qualify for the Boston Marathon, got divorced. He did it on the 12th try. So there is research that physical activity affects the neuroplasticity in your brain and can help you get over trauma. Now, a divorce, as the case was here, might seem like a big trauma, but the researcher I talked to said that if you've reached the point of divorce, you've been living a life of mini traumas for possibly years. So it's not that even if you get to the point of divorce and say, oh, it's amicable, it's fine, mm-hmm. you've probably been living through this. So take my relationship that had been with an alcoholic. I have been living a year and a half of a series of mini traumas. So to go out and exercise, neuroplasticity helps you. If you improve that in your brain rewires itself into a better form, and that's what running's become.
It's fascinating. And okay, so we'll take a break here for the news. And I see that Hillary Clinton, they're showing her stage. So we'll get an update on Secretary Clinton's speech that she'll be making sometime very soon here. But when we come back, let's talk about the Chicago Marathon.
Sure.
Because it plays a role in this book. It's a good example of, you know, you talk about sort of unwinding and reconnecting with your brain. But it also, I mean, there is when you have situations that are in your personal life, they can get in the way of the focus of trying to get something done and accomplishing something. And that sort of is all kind of centers around the Chicago Marathon. We're talking with Jen Miller. She's a journalist who wrote the book Running, A Love Story, 10 Years, 5 Marathons, and 1 Life-Changing Sport. We'll continue our conversation here at the Big Table in just a minute. Stay with us. Yes, a download here on WGN Radio. We're waiting for Secretary Clinton to take the stage. Her headquarters, I believe, where's she at? She's in Brooklyn. No one can go to Jersey or to...
She's going to Brooklyn because I'll be there on Sunday doing another event. That's why
she's
there.
We are here for Jen Miller.
Yes.
Hey,
Hillary.
Right now, everything is set for the candidate to come up on stage. And when she comes up on stage, we will play some of her speech. Right now, we're talking with Jen Miller, author of the book Running, A Love Story, 10 Years, 5 Marathons, and 1 Life-Changing Sport. You know, a memoir, if you will, about your life and how running has changed it and mm-hmm. has also been there for the good and the bad.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about pain.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of, I mean, people who are listening to this, me included, you know, I'm not much of a runner. And one of the things that stops me from doing it in any sort of regular, consistent basis is pain. Talk about pain threshold and what goes into being a runner.
Well, I have 6 toenails, although they don't actually hurt when they fall off. Do you want to see? No, I'm just kidding.
Many listeners are like, exactly. Okay, now I know where we're at.
Well, let me talk about my last marathon, which was on May 1st. New Jersey Marathon, which if you've read the book or read the book, the 2013 New Jersey Marathon is a big part of the book. So I went back to run it again. And I went into it in less than ideal circumstances. The book came out March 22nd, and I went on a book tour while supposedly training for the end of this marathon and doing my most training, which is about 55, 57 miles a week. So that was a lot. I got sick at my Boston event, and then I ran with a shoe tied too tight and hurt my foot. And then I had a nightmare so vivid that I bashed my head against my headboard and gave myself a concussion.
Jeez.
So, pain. And then the night before the race, the manager of the restaurant where we ate stepped on the bad foot. So I had a couple choices going into the race, which was don't run, run the half, or see how it goes. And the other option was run in regular socks or run in compression socks, knowing that if I ran in compression socks, I'd lose a lot of toenails. And it became what are your goals? So I wore the compression socks and I ran the whole marathon.
What were your goals? The goals were like, above all else, I want to finish this marathon.
I wanted to finish that marathon strong. I had hoped to set a new PR, which is a personal record, and I did. But dealing with the pain in that situation was trying to get past it, knowing it would be over soon. So after the race, I had giant blisters on my feet. And my friend who was helping me, it was a cold race and I was sort of stiff after and trying to get out of the wet running clothes and into the clothes to go drinking in. said, how did you run like that? And I'm like, I didn't even think about it. Because once you run a lot and you've run a lot of races, and I've been running races for 10 years now, you get used to that race pain.
Yeah.
It's hard sometimes for runners to differentiate between race pain or situation pain or soreness and real injury. That's the question I get asked the most, is how do I know if I'm hurt? How do I know if I need to rest? And the best I can say is, if you are in acute pain, go get help. Otherwise, it's over time that you get used to it. So there's good pain. So I ran hill repeats this morning, and my legs hurt when I got on the plane today. But I know that's good pain.
Right.
It's my legs are getting stronger as I prepare for a trail run. My first big running injury was something called dead butt syndrome. Yes, that's what it's called. But it's actually called gluteus medius tendinosis, which was an overuse injury. And it felt like an ice pick was being driven into my hip. And it was a pain that didn't go away. So sometimes injuries like that happen to people and they stop running. And I don't blame you. That's totally fine. My mom is a runner now, but she prefers triathlons because she likes the biking and the swimming, which is fine.
But this is all, I mean, what I find fascinating about it is this is very, I don't know what you call marathon training and running, but it's competitive in the way that it's not necessarily for fitness, and it's not to lose weight in any form. It's not necessarily, I've heard you say exercise, and you say exercise in the book, but it does seem to be the elevated form of running, not necessarily something someone's doing to stay in shape or to lose weight.
Right. I'm typically 5 to 10 pounds lighter when I'm not training for a marathon, because the food, I mean, you're hungry all the time. And you talk about something called runger. After I ran the New Jersey Marathon and I took a month off because my legs were shot, it's like having to learn how to eat again, and you don't need all this food.
You know, so what do you mean? Are you doing like 2 dinners a night? That kind
yeah,
of stuff?
Constantly. You're just kind of grazing all the time. And I have a piece, a guide coming out in the New York Times this summer about nutrition and running, in which I stopped eating a lot of fake foods and more real foods and fats and all that sort of stuff. But we don't have to talk about that.
Do you worry at all about, as a runner, as someone who is I don't want to, I don't say this in a bad way, but it is obsessive in the way that you are constantly in the world of running and you're constantly looking for the next race. Do you worry about any sort of unhealthy habits when you do have an injury, or things that just don't seem like it's necessarily humanly possible to do?
Well, I think over time I've learned when to pull back. So my first injury was because I tried to train for my first marathon and qualify for Boston at the same time without ever having run a marathon, and the training, I overtrained. So
that's a thing, right?
It's definitely a thing. After the 2013 New Jersey Marathon, I had a foot injury, which, not a spoiler of the book, and I was in an air cast for 3 months. If I had kept running, I would have been a stress fracture, which would have been a lot worse. So over time, I realized when to stop. So in 2014, I ran 2 marathons in 1 year and realized that was way too much. So I only do 1 road marathon a year, which, sorry guys, means I'm probably not coming back to the Chicago Marathon anytime soon.
Well, the Chicago Marathon plays a role. It kind of starts in the book. It really is the peak of the book. I mean, this is towards the end. You talk about the Chicago Marathon and the experience of running that marathon, because what was happening to you when you lived in Philadelphia, you were in a relationship that wasn't working and you were thinking about getting out, and it had an effect on how you trained and how you sort of got yourself mentally prepared for Chicago. So what's it like to be back in Chicago right now, and tell us this story?
Well, the 2012 Chicago Marathon was my second full marathon. My first had been Philadelphia the fall before. And I had trained for that with a person I was living with. And by the time the Chicago Marathon training rolled around, things weren't going well. And it was at the point in a relationship where neither one of us could really say it was over and we should probably move on, because that's hard. I mean, even if a relationship is broken down to the point that you're not totally even talking to each other sometimes, that's hard, because you love that person at some point. And that person, you know, he still is a friend of mine. So, hey, he's probably not listening, but it's hard to separate your life, because you live together and your books are mixed up and your CDs are mixed up and all that sort of stuff. And our training didn't really match. I have a real problem training in the heat. And Philadelphia in the summer is very hot. So I did not train with him for that race. It was the first time. Like, we had trained together for the first one, not this one. I would go to my mother's house in southern New Jersey and run there because it was a little bit cooler and I could start running at 5 o'clock in the morning and not worry about the drunks from the after hour bars coming after me, that sort of thing. And by the time we got to Chicago, training hadn't gone well because I felt like my life was falling apart, my personal life, at least not my work life. And I came to this city, this beautiful city, and it was a beautiful race day. It wasn't hot. Weather was perfect. And I just crumbled. And I don't remember a lot from what happened. And I even wrote on my personal blog, a blog post, a race report, and I read it over as I was writing the book. And I said, I don't remember any of this stuff. Just because I think it was such a bad experience for me. The race is fantastic. It's probably the most organized race I've ever run outside of the New York City Marathon, with easier logistics than the New York City Marathon. And I came back to Chicago 2 years later for a work trip, and I made sure to run to the finish line and run it over and over and over again to say, you know, the marathon was bad, but this is a great city. And, you know, running can be bad sometimes if it gets, you know, you try to do too much when there's too much going on, but it can be great
for
you too.
A lot of this book is about, you know, accomplishing or getting over things. You know, the New Jersey Marathon, also the Ocean Drive. Do you think at all about a future where you would come back and run the Chicago Marathon just to put a cap on that?
I it's a good idea. I cannot train in the summer anymore. I ran the 2014 New York City Marathon because it's New York. You know, it's New York City Marathon. But I have really bad eczema, for anybody who knows what that is, and it's bad when it's humid out. So I went into the New York City Marathon, even though it was in November, I had an outbreak from running in the heat, and it was all across my body. Hmm. And it's, you know, it might sound like it's just a rash. It's so painful, and it got infected, and it was all steroids and drugs and not the fun kind. So.
Okay, Jen.
Sorry.
All right.
Talk about pain. Anyway, I would like to run the Soldier Field 10-miler.
Okay.
Or the Shamrock Shuffle.
And on another great run here in Chicago.
Sorry, marathon, but I encourage fall marathon. It's a great marathon.
But the idea of coming back to Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm here for a running conference.
The one thing that the one thing you mentioned just in the last answer, just about the idea of running and the drunks from the bars kind of coming after you. You know, you mentioned in this book, and it's something that I think a lot of men who run don't understand, but there's a lot of harassment and just overall nasty behavior, catcalls essentially, yeah, when women run.
And
you run during the day.
Yeah.
Talk about the, because you write about some of the experiences in this book, and they feel like fiction, but they're not.
No, they're not. I run a lot in the middle of the day, not in the summer, just because I work for myself and I like to run before lunch. And in a short span of when I was in Philadelphia, I had my breast grab when I was running. I had a man chase me and say all sorts of bad things. That doesn't even get into what people just scream and yell at you. And the last straw really was someone in a city labeled car said something to me about the way my butt looked in my pants. And I was like, that's it, I'm done. But that it's not just the Philadelphia problem. I was running in my little town in New Jersey, and a guy from a Michelob Ultra truck felt he had something to say. And it's, you know, a lot of the stories that I've read, and I refuse to write this story. Somebody asked me to about, well, how can women stay safe? Like, do they run in pairs? And I said, well, women can stay safe if guys stop doing this. So there was an incident where two guys in the delivery truck said something horrible to me, and my path crossed them later when they were making a delivery and whatever was in that truck. And I made sure to tell their boss foreman exactly what they said to me. You know what? They were scared. They were scared because they're not used to people confronting them, or they just say,
yeah,
it.
Right.
Think it's nothing.
They think
like,
it's
get
anonymous.
Away with it. Right.
Yeah, right.
And I wrote about it for Runner's World, and because I had written something about how this is part of rape culture and blaming women for what pants they wear. And a woman wrote me a very nasty email and called me a whore. So we started calling my pants my whore pants. Hashtag whore pants. If you look this up on Twitter and Instagram, it's really a thing. And what it led to was, it was sort of funny and jokey, but it led to some conversations about, this happens, we don't talk about it. Sometimes we don't talk about it because people brush it off as nothing, or we're so angry about it happening all the time and not being able to do something. So what it actually did was, men started realizing that, oh, hey, maybe I shouldn't honk at a female runner. It's not, she doesn't see it as encouragement. She sees it as a threat. Some people who joined in our Twitter chat about that said women need to respect men, and I don't know how that fit in with it, but okay, whatever. But the more conscious we are of it, and if, yeah, you know, if I get yelled at, please don't ask me what I was wearing. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. Even if they are my electric purple pants that I got for $10 from the Nike outlet in Atlantic City.
you know, this book is very thoughtful. It is a, it's really a story that's not just about learning to run and to, you know, to train. And I mean, there's such great tips in here for runners and things of that nature. But it is the story of your life in a way. Was it difficult? I mean, was it, I don't want to say was it difficult, but what was the takeaway for you now that you finished this, this memoir that's essentially about your life in running? I mean, what are we, what's the future for you? But also, you know, when you reflect back on how people are reacting to it, what's your thought?
Well, I went to therapy when I was done. Because there's a lot of stuff in there.
There is a lot.
And I had to reexamine some things that I didn't want to look at again. I think what the kids would call it today is adulting, becoming an adult. But I became an adult through a pretty traumatic time. And I was thinking about this after I ran this last marathon of, you know, my original goal was to break 4 hours, and so many things happened that that wasn't possible. And even in the race, you know, the foot and the concussion, and I had to stop to use the bathroom 3 times. And I stopped thinking about what would have happened if nothing went wrong. Like, what if it was the perfect day? And what if I hadn't had the concussion? And what if I hadn't gotten sick? And thought instead of what I managed to do with the situation. So I think that's what this book is about. Not really regretting what happened, because, you know, I can't, I've read through this and I felt, I beat myself up a lot for allowing these things to happen. But I think it's more of, this stuff happened, life happened, but it ended up pretty great anyway.
You didn't run from it, you ran alongside it.
I did, there you go.
There you go.
We're gonna put that on the back of the next edition.
Jen Miller is the author of Running, A Love Story, 10 Years, 5 Marathons, and 1 Life-Changing Sport. She is going to be speaking at Universal Soul in Lakeview at 7:30. She's also doing a fun run at 6:30. So if you want to go out, this would be tomorrow night, 6:30. You could do a short group run, and then at 7:30 she's doing the reading and the beers.
And the free beers.
And the beers.
Let's
and you're, and also
beers.
You're in town for the running and fitness event for women, which is also the conference here in Chicago this week.
Yes.
Jen Miller, thanks so much for being my
guest.
Thank
you for having me.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're waiting for Secretary Clinton to speak at her headquarters in Brooklyn, New York. New York! Donald Trump already spoke tonight after his victory, and in, I believe in, I guess it would be in New Jersey. And all the other primaries of states are closing now. So we're, CNN has a just a screenshot of the podium for like an hour. Scroll of all the numbers over on the side. They keep, I think they got Senator Schumer on right now and Jake Tapper. Real small, but just the podium. The podium, Hillary Clinton's podium is the star of CNN's hour here as we wait for her to get on stage. But that was great. I really enjoyed that conversation with Jen Miller. I'm not a runner, you know, but there's something about, you know, I like we hear it all the time when you exercise or you get on a treadmill, you know, this helps with stress and things like that.
Yeah.
It just sounds like, you know, that Jen has found a way to manage her stress. And not only that, but unlock a part of her brain that deals with the many traumas that happen in all of our lives. Everyone who's listening.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a runner, man. I'm just not my thing. I feel like I'm a little too top heavy. Like I have really skinny legs. And I feel like right off the bat, I'm like, oh, all right, man. Like the shins start hurting. And I'm like, it's me. I also have like this thing since I was a kid where my feet kind of go inward. So it's almost like the opposite of like bow-legged. It's like almost like my feet kind of like gravitate to the center. So I'm just not a runner.
No, but I run. I do my Orange Theory fitness.
Oh, right,
I run
right,
the treadmill.
Right.
I run. I ran a marathon. Vowed never to do it again. but when you talk about running culture, what I always get irritated with. When I see, like when you see a runner like run down the street, you know, he's just in his shorts or shirt, whatever, it's fine. But then you have these people that are like way into it. They have, you know, they have like bandages all over their body. They have the straw
that's
something that, you know, sticking out of their back that they can drink out of. They have belts all over their place for, you know, things. And I was like, that's a lot.
Yeah,
that's too many accessories.
You're not an accessory.
Fitbits.
Yeah, right. You know, it's their whole body is filled with accessories.
I say if you know, running or long distances and training for long distances unlocks potential in our brains. I see you, me, and Martyr. We get a group going.
Yeah,
and we destroy this summer. We start building up 2 mile, 5 mile. We go up Mount Baldy. We climb that thing. We're everywhere. We hit the we get the magazines to put us on the front cover because we're just running like fiends. Runner's World will do a big thing on us. Next thing you know, we're up front at the marathon. We'll have costumes. Download costumes. We'll dress, but we'll do much better than anyone thought we would. And then, and by the three quarters of the marathon, they'll be like, download Rob, Pete, Justin. And then we'll end that thing, and it'll be us in like a Kenyan. And we'll be neck and neck.
Only if we can slap the 26.2 bumper stickers on our car afterward.
That's horrible.
Because there's nothing more pretentious than that.
That's the worst.
No, actually, the only thing more pretentious than the 26.2 is the 13.1. You couldn't finish the damn thing? You can only do half?
We should do like 2.6, fun run.
And believe me, they are prevalent at all the Whole Foods across the North Shore.
Wow. No, I'm going to, you know what? We should do a black market. Let's do black market bumper stickers. So if you didn't run it, but you want a 26.2, we can get you one. Just, you know what? We know a guy. We know a couple guys. We know Jen Miller. She'll get it for us.
We've been talking about running the, there's like two half marathons, because I don't think the marathon is good for you. I think it's bad.
It doesn't sound good for you. It's just six toenails.
Yeah. A lot of issues there. And then, but. So we're like, oh yeah, let's run the one in the fall. You know, we can work our way up, you know, to doing it. And then we went to the pages, you know, $95. I'm like, $95 to run a race?
Eh. My pain is worth $95. Yeah. I'm not doing that.
No.
$95.
I mean, you get a $30 T-shirt, I guess. Where's the?
Do they give you a T-shirt? Like at least when you sign in, you get a T-shirt.
Yeah, but then usually you never go pick it up because there's too many people hanging around.
If I'm subjecting my body to $95 of abuse, it's going to be at a bar. Period.
That's right.
We're on to something. Bar marathons. Marathon shots. We'll figure this out.